live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Today, we're going to talk about how scenery, not just greenery, has an impact upon our health. And how kimchi, the fermented kraut, reduces the risk of eczema. And for those who've asked, what can we do if we want a natural way of helping lessen the likelihood of having flu at all, or a cold, or the severity of one if we do get it, I'm going to give you a natural tonic. And then how olive oil can protect against damages of air pollution based upon a new study, and a lot more on health and healing. Then a commentary from Chris Hedges from TruthDig, corporate capitalism is the foundation of police brutality in the prison state. And then how we have a global angst over U.S. secrecy fetishes, Victor Wallace. We're also going to take a look today at environmental issues, including China's glaciers are retreating at a very rapid rate. Why is that a problem? Why should we care? Well, because 1.4 billion people in China, not to mention an additional nearly 2 billion people in the area, would be affected, are affected. Also, the latest on the overheating of the planet, we're entering, quote, uncharted territory at a frightening speed. But aren't they talking about this at the climate summit? Yes, with no positive outcome, nothing that mandates anything. And if you don't have it mandated, where someone is held accountable for their actions or lack of actions, then it's meaningless. Then next year they'll get together and say, well, now we really, really mean it. And then we really, really, really mean it. We've been hearing excuses for over 20 years at these conferences, and nothing fundamental has gotten done as official policy. We'll look at that, and I'll give you an idea of what I'm concerned about. And it's not 100 years from now. It's right now, as I'm speaking. Let's begin. Oh, and by the way, time permitting, I was asked a question, and I will play an audio clip from two individuals. One is a woman, her and her husband are black entrepreneurs, educated, Maggie Anderson, talking about why aren't blacks supporting black companies? Why don't more blacks own companies in their communities? It's a legitimate question. And I was asked my input on this, and I'll give you some solutions. Plus, we're going to hear from another person, a well-known African-American, who also says something about this. I won't have time to play both tapes in their entirety, but enough that you get the gist of it, the message. And it'll be a positive message. First up, I want to share what I do myself and what I would hope that many of you do, and you probably do, that would help protect your immune system, especially like myself when I'm around sick people every day. And even if you're not around sick people, by helping them, counsel them, so you're sitting just inches away, maybe you're working in an office where someone has a cold and now their germs are in the air, or you're on a plane and now you're like in an incubator for the next hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 6 hours, 11 hours. What do you do? Well, it's relatively simple. First, make yourself a juice, or you can make yourself a hot tea. I prefer a juice, and I start off by juicing 2 ounces of fresh organic ginger root. Then I put in the juice of 2 lemons or limes. Limes will work if you can't get lemons. 2 of them, including the skin and the seed, because many of the healing properties of a lemon are in the skin. And if you don't have a way of juicing it, if you have a grater, vegetable grater, you can grate it and grate the skin right in. And because it's organic, there's no pesticides, and you always wash wash everything before you juice it. And then you put about 5 drops of wild oregano oil in. You also then put apple cider vinegar, 1 teaspoon of apple cider vinegar, 1 half teaspoon of fresh organic turmeric, a dash of cayenne pepper to tolerance, meaning some of us, I eat a lot of cayenne, and others even get a sprinkle. It seems to be too hot for them. So you have to determine what is your threshold limit and go right up to the limit. One, this is the one that is a little tricky, but you can use fresh garlic. However, that'll stay on your breath. If you use garlic as a liquid extract, there is an odor-free garlic. Hence, right after you drink it, there's no smell at all, but it still is medicinal and still helping you. And then I would use the 2 green apples and then also cucumber. I would then put 1 teaspoon of high-grade Manuka honey. Now, Manuka honey, which is the most healing honey in the world, is graded based upon its medicinal value. Like 5 is the lowest, and then you get 10, 15, 20, and it goes up. But then there's a special medicinal Manuka honey. It is the highest powered honey in the world. I would put it right up with the absolute essentials. Now it's expensive, so you have to buy a little tiny container, and you don't use a lot of it. It's 500, its rating. There's nothing anywhere in nature that's rated that high as a honey. It's expensive. Even discount, it's probably around $80. But remember, it'll never go bad, not in your whole lifetime. Honey's the only food in nature that won't go bad. Raw, organic, unfiltered, unheated honey. So you put some of that, whatever one you can afford, into there, and that's your juice. And that, have that once a day. And then in the evening, you can have the same thing, but without the green apple. Instead, you have it with green tea. And that will be a great way to protect your body and help your immune system. Also, make sure that you're taking, I would say, 5,000 units of vitamin D3 each day. Unless you find yourself coming down with a cold or flu, then you can up that to 10,000 units. And also make sure you're getting your beta carotene from your other vegetables. So eating red peppers, sweet peppers, yellow, purple, having your berries. Also, you can do the same identical drink, but in substitute the green apples, you substitute it for raspberries, red, black raspberries, strawberries, and blueberries, pomegranates. Now, you don't juice them because you won't get any juice out of it. A little tiny bit. Instead, you blend them in a blender, and that will help you as well. So those are some things that can make a difference. Now, and there are some herbs in addition, like panets, ginseng is very good, Ganoderma lucidum, which is your Chinese mushroom, and Artis conch, C-O-N-K, which is a Ganoderma, and which is a form of mushroom, and your Chinese milk vetch root, that is M-I-L-K-V-E-T-C-H, Astragalus, A-S-T-R-A-G-A-L-U-S, and Paudiarco, P-A-U-D-A-R-C-O, and those are all terrific for your immune system. Now, something that I love, sauerkraut. Now, you can get non-salted sauerkraut. It's a little bland, but it's still extremely powerful. You can also get vinegar-free sauerkraut. So it depends upon what you're looking for. You're looking for a high probiotic, something that will help your immune system, and the probiotics are very good for your immune system. So having some low-sodium sauerkraut in a salad, or stuff it into with some sweet onions and stuff that into a shell of a avocado. You take the avocado, scoop it out of the shell, mash it up with some lemon juice, apple cider vinegar, mustard, and put in some sauerkraut, blend it all together, stuff it back into the avocado. Delicious meal right there. If you want to really go over the top a little bit, then put some lightly toasted pine nuts and some walnuts raw in there as well. Anyhow, there is a popular form of fermented food found in Korea. It's called kimchi, K-I-M-C-H-I. Now, according to Hoseo University in Korea, the increased use of fermented foods, and by the way, fermented foods could also be dairy or non-dairy yogurt, for example, or kefir, they're associated with a significant reduced risk of atopic dermatitis, like eczema. And since we have so many millions of Americans with different forms of atopic dermatitis, get rid of the meat, get rid of the processed foods, and I've seen by itself eczema clean up. But now this is just one more thing you can do. Bring in the probiotics. Also, some good information that I was reading in a journal involving, quote, people feel healthier when they live in a more scenic area. And researchers have found that this link holds across urban, suburban, and rural areas and cannot simply be explained by the income of local residents or how green an area is. So it's not just about do you have a park? It is the quality of the view, the ambiance. And I believe that's also true for everything. For example, I was showing someone who has a store how I would decorate the window. And I said, I would rather put three beautiful outfits in and then let the emphasis be on the outfits. The lighting should be on them so people can see the quality of the design, how it fits. You have all these same outfits all on a rack, and you can't see any of them. I said, minimalism, when you unclutter an environment, helps you then focus upon what's important in the environment. Hence, the person has stacks of papers and rooms filled with stuff. They're living in an environment where they can't see anything specific, and therefore, frequently, the more you clutter, the less motivated you are to clean it up because you have immersed yourself into the clutter. You become a part of the clutter. People become a part of the environment that they create. They become a part of the relationship they create. And if it's toxic or negative, bitter, cynical, jealous, rageful, that's what they become. Or they have to adapt to someone else who's like that. So one of the ways that we can start the new year is unclutter our lives of everything. And everyone. Last evening, I was counseling someone who said, well, I've done something that shocked everyone. I said, what's that? This is a 56-year-old person who has had weight problems, cancer problems, fatigue problems, and heart problems. At least two of the conditions she's had would have caused her death. She has gone on protocols. She has made enormous improvements. She's lost over 130 pounds, and she no longer has active cancer, and her heart is now normal. But she said, I knew I was avoiding the most important change in my life. I said, what's that? She said, I met with my family last night. Now, they're older. The children are grown and in their mid to late 20s. And her husband, she said, I'm going to the next part of my life, and I'm going there alone. I have been making sacrifices for everyone for my entire life. I have not lived my own life. I have not done anything except work 80 hours a week to see that all of you have everything you want or everything you need every day of your life, and not once have any of you ever said, Mom, what can we do for you? And I realize that I have to get beyond my guilt and realize I deserve a life. So everything I can possibly do for you, I have done. I will stay in communication, but I'm taking my two dogs, and I'm going to start my life over. Do I know what I'm going to do? I am clueless. Do I know where I'm going to go? I don't. All I know is I can't keep living the way I'm living because I don't have a life, and I could have lost my life many times. No one seemed to care. While you were not working, I, with my diseases and sickness, was going to work every day and working 15 hours a day. Where you sat on your lazy dead ass and did nothing. She was very angry. And I said, whoa. And I said, what was her response? They didn't believe me. They said, no, you're not going to go anywhere. You're going to keep being what you are. And she said, okay, we'll see. And I said, okay, well, let's see. And I said, why are you doing this? Because it's rare that someone says to their family, she says, you have to know my family. You have to know how I have enabled them and they have stayed so dysfunctional. And she said, there are times when I not only have to come home after a long day's work, but I have to go shopping, cook the food, feed them, and clean the dishes and clean up because no one lifts a finger. I said, well, hold on a second. Are you blaming your family for what you encouraged or allowed or adapted to? Why didn't you set some boundaries saying, don't we all have a responsibility to help? Couldn't you all help with the shopping? Couldn't you help with the prep? Couldn't you help with the cleanup? Isn't that legitimate? Couldn't you help do your own laundry? You're 27 years old. You're old enough to take care of your room. Do I have to come in and clean your room, clean your laundry for you, make your bed for you, pull down the sheets at night for you? Then I said, you didn't have to do that. You chose to. You may not have liked the outcome, but most people don't like the outcome of their choices when the choice goes wrong. But no one forced you to do that. She says, I know. She said, but I'm changing, and no one's going to be happy with it. And my friends don't like it. My family, you know, thinks it's just amusing, but I'm not going to do it. And I'm going to do it because I haven't had a life. At 56, I want to start living my life. And if no one likes it, okay, they don't like it, but I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to live my life. I thought, well, good for you. You know, and I'm going to bring her on the show after the first year if she makes the changes and have her tell her story. I think we would be motivated. So in this little story that I was talking about how scenery, the ambiance in our life is important, not just some greenery. Think of how we clutter our lives with people. Those people deserve to be in our lives. And here's something we never ask, and we should. We have people in our lives, and some of these enhance the experience. They bring love and joy, creativity, comfort. They bring friendship. They bring all the best qualities another human can be. And they leave nothing of their own personal debris for us to clean up or tend to. That's the ideal. But that's not the most common. More often than not, we allow people to take advantage of us or people who want to be rescued. And there's a lot of people in America who figured out that it's a whole lot easier having people rescue you if you really play the victim. So they don't have to do anything. And then when you finally figure out their game, they'll find someone else. And then you just wasted all that time and energy that you could have had a quality relationship with or quality friendship or quality time for yourself. So at a certain point, do we ever stop and ask this? What have you done to prove you deserve to be in my life? Oh, now that's one of those not-so-touchy-feely questions. Do we ever have the courage to ask that? Because if someone hasn't shown they deserve to be in your life, then what is the likely outcome of it? Because when I have found that when people, by their character, the quality of their spiritual values, their ethics, the sensitivity of their nature, that's what they're bringing, and that more than shows, hey, I'm blessed and gifted for having this person in my life. But what about the persons that take and don't give. And there's always a game. There's always a drama. Every other day they create some damn new drama, and then always making everyone else responsible for how they feel, and it's always someone else's fault because they don't have a legitimate life. So they live through their dramas. Do you know anyone who lives through their drama? Be honest. Just right now, just think for a moment. How many people do you know who only have something to share based upon their dramas? And they're always pointing fingers at someone else. So in that context, the scenery, the ambiance in our life, if it's cluttered with negative people, it's time to say goodbye. Start your new life, a new year, a new purpose, new direction, and unclutter it. Get rid of stuff. I'm getting rid of my entire living room. Now, it's custom made. I designed it myself. Had it made at not just a good living, but a very expensive good living for the person here in New York City, a master craftsman who made it. My couch, my chair, an ottoman. And I want to unclutter. I'm going to have an empty room. And then I'll decide what I want to put in it. Start over. Unclutter. Unclutter. Every year I give all my clothes away except for maybe a couple pairs of jeans and clothes I'm using, because I'd rather see someone else who may not have the benefit of that have that. Why don't we start giving away this stuff that we really don't need? If you don't need it, give it to a person who can use it and appreciate it. I think that's important. Books that we have around, if you've read them, give them to someone who can read them. Give them to one of the people, some on the street, so someone else will benefit from the same insights that you gained when you read that book. Unclutter from people who shouldn't be there and objects that have long passed an expiration date of interest and aesthetics. Create a new aesthetics. When you eat, don't just sit down to a plate of food. Decorate it. Make it exciting. Bring some passion into it. And then, if you're not sure how to do it, every Monday, I'm putting up on my website my own gourmet, original, vegan, gluten-free items. If you need some inspiration, use those and then make your own variation of it. The recipe's really good, and I got 2,000 recipes I've created. In fact, I'm working, my new cookbook's coming out, and then my next cookbook, which is a dessert cookbook only, vegan gourmet desserts from around the world. I'm taking 20 countries and making 10 desserts from each country, but making them vegan, gluten-free, and healthy. And that'll be done sometime in the next 6 months, because when I go on the road and I go back home to my own home on the ranch, I spend my afternoons quiet time preparing food. Why don't you try that? Just try making things more unique and more creative. It doesn't matter how it turns out. You know, just try it. But try to start changing the ambiance, the scenery, and see if you can't benefit, as this study showed, that other people enjoyed this as well. So yeah, it's more than greenery. And finally, olive oil protects against air pollution. Now, this is from the Environmental Protection Agency. And here's what it says. Dietary supplementation with olive oil may protect blood vessels from the deleterious effects of air pollution, suggests a new study from the EPA. Exposure to air pollution and the tiny particles from burning fuels in cars and other vehicles in particular can affect the function of cells lining blood vessels, the endothelium, leading to endothelial dysfunction, which in turn is detrimental for our heart and can create cardiovascular problems. And this was published in Environmental Health Perspectives. So, what is it about olive oil? Well, specifically, it's the oleic acid, O-L-E-I-C. That's what they've determined is the strong anti-inflammatory, antioxidant property in extra virgin, first-pressed, organic olive oil. So have one teaspoon of organic olive oil each day and help your heart, your endothelium, increase flow-mediated dilation, meaning your blood vessels are able to open and decrease blood pressure. So that's important. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. By the way, I'm looking to interview for a new host for the Progressive Commentary Documentary Hour. The Progressive Documentary Hour selects from around the world those documentaries that have important social and humanistic meaning. And it's a one-hour program. And if you love documentaries and you're a good communicator, then you'll call Jason at 646-926-5428, 646-926-5428, and that'll be a lot of fun, and I'm sure that we have more than enough skilled people out there. I believe that we should not use, unless we're unaware of it, anything made in prisons that exploit prison labor, unless the manufacturers are putting into a trust account that would earn interest for each of the prisoners who are working in that prison industry, so they're not exploited. Unfortunately, right now, people are not aware that many of the things they take for granted that are made without prison labor are actually made by prison labor and exploiting it. And it's severely exploited. The inmates are paid, for example, for working for Whole Foods, the big corporation. One day, remind me to tell you a story about John Mackey, the founder of it, myself, and how I actually helped him with his first store. And he didn't think about saying thank you. But then recently, just this year, he and I were both at a conference together. I'm not a friend of Whole Foods or Mr. Mackey. In any case, Mr. Mackey, you're worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Your store chain makes about $12 billion or more. Do you know the inmates are paid only 74 cents a day? A day. To do your raised tilapia. And you sell it for $11.99 a pound. That's a really good markup. But what if it were you being exploited? And I consider that personally exploitation. Hence, I would boycott your entire health food store. That's not the only reason. There are a lot of other reasons to boycott it, but that's one. McDonald's, the world's most successful fast food franchise. There are a lot of goods that you sell there, including your plastic cutlery, containers, and uniforms. Inmates who sew McDonald's uniforms make even less money by an hour than the people who wear them. Walmart states, quote, that forced or prison labor will not be tolerated by Walmart. Really? Well, then someone should send the owners, all collectively worth about $150 billion, a message. Basically, every item in your store has been supplied by third-party prison labor factories. Walmart purchases its produce from prison farms. Yes, you do. Where laborers are often subjected to long, arduous hours in the blazing heat without adequate sunscreen, water, or food. Oh, I forgot, no sunscreen. And how about this insourcing? And we can thank Kelly Davidson from U.S. Uncut for supplying some of these facts. That we can also look at Victoria's Secret, the female inmates in South Carolina. So undergarments and casual wear for the Victoria's Secret company. And in the late 1990s, two prisoners were placed in solitary confinement for telling journalists that they were hired to replace made in Honduras garment tags with made in USA tags. So did you deceive your public, Victoria's Secret? Were you actually switching garment tags? I'd like to hear from you. Please send a representative on the air. If this is not true, happy to have you say it's not true and provide proof. But if it is true that you put two females in solitary confinement, which is torture, and by any measure, and if you doubt that it's torture, why don't all the CEOs, this would be a really good idea, all the CEOs of every major corporation in the world spend the next 30 days in solitary confinement, living as any solitary confinement person would, with the same deprivations. And then and only then, and I believe that no member should ever be elected to any office, I don't care what office it is, unless you've spent at least 60 days in prison in solitary confinement. And then let's see if you still want to get people the same harsh punishments, as if somehow you're redeeming them for the crimes they committed by this punishment. No, this is torture, and it's non-constructive, just like everything that you do in our government is non-constructive. I'm dealing with that next week, by the way. I'm going to show you how much money corporations gain and how much money American taxpayers spend for things we don't need. It is mind-boggling. And yet we never talk about that, where our tax money actually goes. Does it go to help us make it a better place? No. So Victoria's Secret, you've been challenged. Made in Honduras price tags replaced with Made in USA. True or not? Armark, the company which also provides food to colleges and public schools and hospitals, has a monopoly on food service in about 600 prisons in the U.S. You have a history of poor food service, including massive food shortages that caused prison riot. AT&T, in 1993, the massive phone company laid off thousands of telephone operators, all union members, in order to increase their profits, even though AT&T's company policy regarding prison labor reads eerily like Walmart's. They have consistently used inmates to work in their call center since 1993. And they pay them, wow, $2 a day for a full day's work. British Petroleum, you spilled about 5 million barrels of oil into the Gulf, and you sent a workforce of almost exclusively African-American inmates to clean up the toxic spill, while community members, many of whom were out of work, fishermen, struggled to make ends meet. Did you provide those workers with protective masks? When I was down in the Gulf, when I was in Louisiana, when I was in Alabama, when I was in Texas, when I was in Florida, when I was in Mississippi, I didn't hear people say that you gave them protective face masks that would prevent the different types of pollutants in the both the oil itself, but in the cleanup chemicals from impacting. There's a lot of people down there who are very sick today. So what do we learn? We learn that a lot of the things that we consume have been made with prison labor and exploited. And also, according to the article, quote, implicit in past and present use of prison labor are Microsoft, Nike, Nintendo, Honda, Pfizer, Saks Fifth Avenue, JCPenney, Macy's, Starbucks, and more. So let's educate ourselves about what products are made in prisons, and then we can boycott them. Also from our environmental segment today, this is from Edward Wong from the New York Times, quote, over the years, the Ziang and this person and his fellow scientists at a high and lonely research station in the mountains of northwest China have tracked the effects of rising temperatures on one of China's most important water sources. Quote, the thing most sensitive to climate change is a glacier, says Dr. Quinn as he slowly trod across an icy field of the Mengke Glacier, one of the country's largest. In the 1970s, people thought glaciers were permanent. They didn't think that glaciers would recede. They thought this glacier would endure. But then the climate began changing and temperatures climbed. And now they've really gone. Now, according to this article, you have an awful lot of people who are going to be running out of water, or at least enough clean water. And this is because China, which remains the world's largest emitter of greenhouse gas, has been impacted, as we saw with the red alert just yesterday. First time in their history they had to issue a red alert. And that means it's really bad in the capital. In any case, you have 1.4 billion people in China, and they're claiming now, the Chinese are claiming, that rising sea levels along the urbanized coast and floods from storms across China and the erosion of glaciers and more than 80% of the permafrost on the Tibet Plateau could disappear. And then you're going to have a rise of up to 5 degrees Celsius. And that means, by the way, that's 10 degrees Fahrenheit. And that means who can live under those conditions? You're going to see food can't be grown, animals will die, humans will die by the millions. And they have more flooding in the last 2 years than they've had in their history. So, but there are 46,000 glaciers of the third pole region. They have to sustain 1.5 billion people in 10 countries. Just remember, when you look at the glaciers, the Himalayas, you're looking at rivers like the Mekong Delta in Vietnam, the hills of eastern Myanmar, the southern plains of Bangladesh. All of these people are getting their water from that same source, and it's receding. And that means they're getting less water. And even in India, in its major rivers, it's very turgid. It's very thick. It doesn't flow like water in many places because it's so polluted. And also, there's less water. So then we have this from Common Dreams. Overheating planet entering uncharted territory at frightening speed. Quote, with new evidence that the concentration of greenhouse gases broke yet another record last year, the head of the World Meteorological Organization warned yesterday that the warming planet is hurtling, quote, into uncharted territory at a frightening speed. Now, these are very conservative people. They're not alarmist. In fact, if anything, they try to always downplay how severe something is. According to the top person publishing an article in Greenhouse Gas Bulletin, and this is through the United Nations Weather Agency, they say that carbon dioxide, CO2, reached 397.7 parts per million last year. Well, hold on a second. Did we miss something? Wasn't the highest amount that we could tolerate as safe 350 parts per million? Yes. And weren't we talking about how not to go beyond 350? Yes. So you're now saying that we're up at 400 parts per million? Yes. And quote, this is the new permanent reality, according to the Secretary General, Michael Gerard. Quote, we can't see CO2. It is invisible as a threat, but it's a very real one. It means hotter global temperatures, more extreme weather events like heat waves, floods, melting ice, rising sea levels, and increased acidity of the oceans. This is happening now, and we are moving into uncharted territory at a frightening speed. All right, my thought on this. For the last 8 years, I have been broadcasting a lot of environmental update information on the tipping points. Four of those tipping points have tipped. We can't bring them back, not in our lifetimes, not in the future, no matter what we do. The trouble is where people claim to care about the environment, the actions of governments and the major polluting industries show otherwise. They will tell us something that sounds good, nice platitudes, but no decisive mandatory capabilities. So what does that mean? It means our government and the industry supporting our government and vice versa are leading us into, quote, uncharted territory? Well, when I see how many lake beds are dry, and I see how many farms are dry with just the carcasses of animals that have died because farmers couldn't afford water, they didn't have any more water, and then you realize, gee whiz, this is bad. But it's not bad, depending upon where you live, the context of your life. If you're living in a place with abundant water and food, and you don't see dead, dried up carcasses, and you don't see all this drought, and you have plenty of clean, healthy water to drink, your perception of the problem is different. And the people in Washington and in New York and Chicago and other places, they don't see it. They're in the green zones. They've detached themselves from the reality of what's outside. When you're in an oasis, you don't appreciate the heat and the scorpions and the snakes on the desert because you're protected. You have food and water and shade in a cooling environment. That's how we've been living in denial. So what is the solution? There's only one solution. It will not be political. Can't be. Our system's too corrupt. We all understand that. Instead, we don't need any more government panels. That just delays the inevitable. We need to stop buying things that we don't need. We need to stop polluting. We need to start conserving. We as individuals. If we stop eating animal proteins, if we stop eating all meat and fish and chicken and pork, if we stop eating their dairy, if we start buying locally grown things, then we reduce the carbon footprint, we reduce global warming. If we're more conscious of what we use, and we don't get bags unless they're paper or biodegradable plastics that don't end up making a massive plastic dump in the ocean. If we stop overbuying things and buy only what we need, we would save about one-third of our food bill. So that's how we will have change. And then wherever possible, if you have the resources to do so, start doing things like looking at the new technology like solar paint, where when you paint your house, it then accesses its own energy field. This is the new science. It's there. And solar is very cheap now compared to what it was a few years ago. When I solarized my house, it was before any of the major innovations. Today, I would pay one-fifth the amount and even have better solar. But it's nice when I look at my meter and it's going in reverse for a whole house. So we have to become conscious, and we should insist that all homes in the future built in any community have solar and have renewable energy as a part of the construction of that house. So these are things we can do. I'm Gary Knoll. Let's now play a little bit of a woman explaining how black-owned companies were wiped out at the beginning of this last century. Maggie Anderson explains this. She makes some very important points, talking points, things for us to think about, and then I'll have a shorter piece from another very important voice of the black community.
I come from a Cuban family. I grew up in Miami, but I grew up in a predominantly black, very poor neighborhood in Miami called Liberty City. From there, I went on to Atlanta, studied at Emory University, and had the honor of being a congressional aide to civil rights hero Congressman John Lewis. And after that, I went to Chicago and got my MBA and my law degree at the University of Chicago, where I also got to learn from another hero of mine, taught constitutional law by then Professor Barack Obama and now the President of the United States. We fell in love while we were in graduate school. Now that's John and I, not the President and I. We found great success in corporate America, got married, bought our pretty house in our pretty suburb, had our two pretty little girls, and we're living out our picture-perfect, comfortable Cosby life. But when we analyzed the rest of the black community, we saw that things were getting worse and worse for most black people. We felt guilty about that. We felt bad about that. So we gave more to our black church. We gave more to the NAACP and the UNCF. Wasn't that enough? Philanthropy is commendable, but it must not cause a philanthropist to overlook the circumstances of economic injustice which make philanthropy necessary. Dr. Martin Luther King said that. Now, what is this economic injustice he was talking about? What are these circumstances he was talking about? In America, in the Asian community, the dollar circulates among the community's banks and retailers and professionals for about 28 days before it leaves the community. In Jewish communities, that circulation period is about 19 days. In WASP communities, predominantly white areas, if you will, the dollar stays 17 days. My Hispanic brothers and sisters keep their dollar for about a week. And in the black community, the community Dr. King was slain fighting for, we keep our dollar for 6 hours. Let me tell you what that means in real life terms. That means in Asian communities, Asian kids get to see business owners who look like them every day, all the time. There are Asian banks and insurance companies and grocery stores all over the community, and those businesses employ from the community, and the families take care of those businesses and vice versa. Asian unemployment in America is at a low 4 to 5%. Most Asian Americans, over 50%, are self-employed or employed by Asian firms. Those circumstances, that economic and business growth, lead to high educational attainment. There's business and political power, low poverty, strong businesses, low crime in Asian neighborhoods. 6 hours in the black community, let me tell you what that means. That means that black kids can't see business owners who look like them every day. There are no black-owned grocery stores and dry cleaners and pharmacies and clothing stores locally owned in the black community. So the people there cannot get jobs, much less create jobs in the community. So black unemployment in places like Detroit, Gary, and Oakland, sometimes 40%. And those circumstances lead to social problems like recidivism, high crime, high gang and drug activity, poverty. That's what's going on with those 6 hours. And those disparities cause the same kind of problems in the corporate space. 60% of the money that is spent with Asian suppliers in corporate America, so your Asian professional firms, Asian products you see on the shelves, used to be spent with black-owned businesses. And the same kind of shift has happened between Hispanic businesses and black-owned businesses. That's why when you go into a grocery store, you'll see whole aisles full of products coming from Asian companies, from Hispanic companies. So let's go to the grocery store, or the drugstore, and see where the black-oriented products are. You go there, you'll see products like these. You'll see Spoton Wave and Less Jam and Smooth and Shine and Dark and Lovely and Strength of Nature and Dark and Natural and Stay Soft Fro. All those products, products that only black people buy every day. 100% black market. All those products are owned by L'Oreal, a company out of France. All those billions of dollars leave the black community. Some of that money could come back if L'Oreal had supplier diversity, if L'Oreal was doing any business with black-owned firms. L'Oreal only has black buyers, no black suppliers. Same deal with Hennessy. Hennessy, Wall Street Journal estimates between 60 to 80% of Hennessy's U.S. market comes from the black community. That means that Hennessy closes down tomorrow without black consumers. Billions and billions of dollars going outside of the community. Hennessy has no black distributors, no black suppliers, does not advertise in black-owned media or use black-owned advertising agencies. So, bottom line, most of the businesses in black areas are not black-owned. Most of the products catering to black culture don't come from black companies. Black unemployment is highest among any group in America. Black firms are the highest employer of black people. So I can give you more. Chicago, 60 KFC franchises, most of them full of black people and black money every day. None of them owned by black franchisees. I'm just trying to give you this picture of the circumstances of economic injustice Dr. King referred to. And what I hope we can do is I can get you to understand that if this is the picture of economic injustice he was thinking about, can we look at the opportunity or maybe the duty or at least the right to do something about that economic injustice? All kind of folks rally if a white racist shoots an unarmed black teen. And then we protest a legal system that would let that killer go free. Now, will we rally? Will we come together if that unarmed black boy gets shot by a black gangbanger. And that happens because that black boy lives in a place that is so economically depleted, so poor, and the people there are so angry and so frustrated that that place has become a war zone overrun by drug activity. Will you protest for that economic injustice? Well, I conceived of and conducted the empowerment experiment, hoping that if we shared this story with you, you would do just that. And it was tough living like that. It was tough and fearful being called a racist, a Nazi, or the other N-word, dealing with death threats and hate mail, just because I decided for 1 year to do this experiment to explore the possibility of using my buying power to help my economically deprived community. It was humiliating taking CBS News and PBS NewsHour through the black areas of Chicago, trudging through all of that economic deprivation and all that social decay. Every face we see black, watching the correspondents and camera crews shake their heads as we go store to store, door to door. Hi, we're doing a story on black businesses. May we meet your owner? Blocks and blocks, sometimes miles, dozens of businesses without engaging a black proprietor. It hurt as a black woman to see that. And I know I hurt some feelings to show that, but I really hoped that that year would bring you in and take you there and show you things that you may not want to see, but you needed to see and hopefully really wanted to understand. I wanted you to see Jordan.
Okay, now it's a longer piece and I have the whole piece up on my website, another 20 minutes. The message is clear. I want you to hear one more voice on the very same identical topic.
If white immigrants can come to this country 50 years ago with nickels and dimes and no education, and come here and pool their little nickels and dimes and no education, and set up little stores, develop these stores into larger stores, develop this into an industry which creates job opportunities for whites. Since Lincoln was supposed to have freed the black man 100 years ago, and today the black man, according to the government economist, has spending power of $20 billion per year, we feel that with the black man spending $20 billion a year, not setting up any businesses, not creating any industry, not creating any job opportunities for his own kind, he's not in a moral position to point the finger today at the white man and tell the white man that he's discriminating against him for not giving him a job in factories that he himself set up. If the black man has $20 billion, and these so-called Negro leaders are such geniuses that they can integrate white restaurants and integrate white factories and integrate, force themselves into that which the white man has set up, they should use this same ingenuity to show the black people how to pool our wealth and set up something of our own. And then
Malcolm X. A suggestion. I believe that there's another element here. Think of how many people within the black community would make great business owners, but they don't have the resources. They can't get the loans. There's discrimination also. We've seen this repeatedly. And I believe that we should ask all of the most affluent and successful blacks in America to come together to have a conference that would be based upon them pulling their money, their own personal money, into an interest-free pool, and then have people within the communities come forth and get the loans, in effect the loans that would help them open businesses, and so that money stays in the community. Now, I have my own ideas, and if that is not done, then I intend to do it myself. After the first of the year, I will be inviting people who have ideas for businesses and are not financed to help see if I can't give them a chance to get into business and to take a block, maybe a block in Harlem or a block in Bed-Stuy, and open up a business and run completely by blacks so the money stays there. People who have experience, people who will hire people and then train them into these positions, and do it as a community effort. And the money then stays in the community to open up another business. and another business, and everyone paid a living wage and health benefits. And I believe that you have such an enormous pool of quality, talented, extraordinarily creative and gifted individuals that it would be a very good success. If you can do it, just all you have to do is just do it one place as an example, then you show it can be done. And those of us who have been blessed to have some success in life, we have a moral responsibility to help others. After all, what is the purpose of having anything? You can't take it with you, so share it when you're in this world. And then it becomes a matter of the second step. Stop buying products that in any way are made with prison labor, are any way exploitive, and any way undermine your health. So if you stopped in all the different markets in the United States, if you stopped buying their hamburgers and hot dogs and colas and french fries and pizzas and alcohol, and you stop supporting that, then that's also helping you reclaim your right to be healthy, your right for your children's health. So I think this is very important. And for companies to have all these best-selling products but not owned by African Americans in the black community, it's time for that to change. And do it with one store. Start with one store, a store that is there for the community, where all the products sold are from the community. 100%, all the food, whatever it may be, it's made by blacks, for blacks in that community. That's what I like to see. And I'm going to be putting word out to those affluent African-Americans. I don't know many of them personally, but I know how to get to them and ask them, would they be willing to do this without seeing an income for themselves? In other words, don't do it because you're going to make money. They've made enough money. I've seen so many people make so much money and not give any of it back to their communities. Now, I'm not the only person who's noticed this. Give it back to the community. They can afford it. When you've got $3 billion and you're Oprah Winfrey, you can afford it. But don't do it to showboat. Don't do it to, you know, to show, oh, look at me and do it. You can do it anonymously. Do it with humility. And then let's see if we can't have that woman. I'll invite her to come with her camera crew and go through a block where every single business on that block. In Harlem, I went up to film, and I filmed some of the stores, the McDonald's, but then I filmed a juice store. And it is owned by an African-American. And almost all the customers, not all, but the vast majority are African-American. It's a juice store. And everything they do in there is based upon health, health to the community, and the dollar stays more than 6 hours in the community. I'd like to see every single store on a block done that way. So I'm going to make this an important part of the new year and see if we can make this happen. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.
Everybody claims that they want the best things out of life. But not everyone makes